CIA, motherfucker.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza. Cause you're a freak with a microphone.
I am an FBI agent.
You're listening to the Super Podcast, featuring hosts Super Marcy.
And I think everybody these days can relate to Serial Mom.
And Pete the Terrible Aussie.
But one of my pet peeves in movies, like people sitting down to have dinner and they don't actually finish the dinner.
This podcast contains coarse language.
See, watching this, like, I just want to go and...
Adult themes.
But, like, the whole, this whole movie is just hinges on someone's ass.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Visit supermarcy.com for more information. Now for our feature presentation.
Listen, sister, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you.
By the way, his testicle retrieval operation went quite well.
White Russian. No ice. Hold the vodka. Hold the Kahlua.
Isn't this 4215 pussy way?
G'day everyone, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to the long-awaited 167th episode of the Super Podcast, the flagship show of the Super Network. And with me, as always, is the creator of this very podcast, and somehow reluctantly this let me join the show back in the early days, but that was probably a big mistake on her part, but I don't think she'll disagree. And that, of course, is the one, the only Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks, Bede. That was a very weird introduction. I don't regret having you on board because it's the dynamic duo of Marcy and Bede that makes all the podcasts at the Super Network pretty sweet. And I apologize to everybody that you haven't had just a regular old Super Podcast episode. We have been busy with all the other freaking podcasts we are doing, and we should hopefully be having at least a episode of the Super Podcast every few months on supermarcy.com/the Super Network.
Indeed.
Or slash is in an address, just it is called the Super Network. Just to
exactly.
Clarify.
Exactly. Oh. Well, it's good to kind of have a get back to the older show without having the to original. Do an audio. Yeah, the original and the best without having to do an audio commentary as well for these, which we have been doing most of them since the last time we recorded a single episode of the Super Podcast. So I'm excited for this one. However, though, Marcy, we're not alone on this podcast. We have a very special guest who is making his long-awaited return to the show. And the last time he was on was actually on one of our previous regular episodes of the Super Podcast. And that, of course, is our good friend, Buddy Watson. Hello, Buddy, and welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back. I had a look when I recorded last with you guys, and it was June of 2022. So it's almost 2 years.
Almost.
To the day. And that kind of depresses me because I didn't think it was that long ago. And that just shows how time flies and how I'm getting older quicker. And yeah, that's kind of depressing.
Let's
not
think about that part. But we will certainly do more episodes. I mean, we will do more podcasts with you in the future, and they won't be like 2 years in between.
Well, indeed.
Well, that's kind of how this came about, because I haven't recorded a podcast in a long time, specifically in the movie space, doing a lot of gaming things with some of my other gaming friends and over there in a number of different places. But yeah, I've been wanting to record and basically just came up with an idea to make it happen so we can all kind of hang out. So this is kind of just an excuse for us to hang out on a Friday night and talk about some movies we recommended for each other. So yeah, if that's what it takes to get together, then so be it. I could do that all the time.
That's what we'll do, because we don't get to hang out in person all that much because you live all the other way up in the northern part of Australia. But it is good when you visit down here and we get to hang out in person. But at least we can hang out online.
That's it.
Exactly.
Such was the ways of the lockdown, the dark days.
The dark days, as Marcy wears her dark hoodie.
Yes. I'm Darth Marcy. He's kind of like Darth Vader if I had a... Damn, voice mod software doesn't work on bloody Zoom.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. So we're glad that you're back on the show, Buddy. And as you sort of stated before, for this episode of the show. We thought, you know what we haven't done in a while, Marcy? We haven't done a movie swap episode, which I always find a lot of fun. And for this one, we decided all three of us would pick a movie for us each. So we got three movies tonight. I picked for you, Marcy. Marcy, you picked for Buddy, and Buddy picked for me, and vice versa. So we have three very awesome films, but they do have a theme between them. With our movie swap episode today, we're going to be talking about foreign films from the 2000s.
I thought you were going to say the theme was AIDS, but yeah, only two out of three cover that. So we were so close. So close to accidentally having an AIDS triple feature, which would have been bizarre. But, I guess we'll talk about that soon enough.
Very weird coincidences with this one.
I'm just going to imagine in the movie that you recommended, Marcy, that was kind of the outlier, that the character's mother in that movie that is dying, that's not really a spoiler, instead of tuberculosis, I'm just going to imagine she had AIDS. So that can be a thing.
We could just, I can't think of the word.
Retcon it into that. Yeah. Yeah, that was like I was almost tempted to say that. I thought that's a little too dark for at least this early in the episode, but we'll get to
here
that.
I am. Sorry.
Yes.
We've done it now.
Buddy. Buddy, you were meant to be the nice one on the show, the good boy, but clearly it's gone downhill. But then again, that is the Super Podcast, so we love when stuff like that happens. But yes, we are doing foreign films from the 2000s, and I'm very much looking forward to these ones because one of them, of course, I have seen before, but the other two I have not, so I'm looking forward to discussing these ones. So for this episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the films The Twilight Samurai from 2002, Yesterday from 2004, and Confessions from 2010.
Indeed. Very, very excited to discuss these ones. So yeah, I guess we'll kick it off with the film that I picked as a recommendation for Buddy, and I actually thought Bede had seen this, but no, he had not. So I thought, I think a really good movie to introduce Buddy to would be a film called The Twilight Samurai, and this was one that someone I won't name recommended to me during a movie swap, as it turns out, and I just completely fell in love with the film. So that is why I picked Twilight Samurai.
Indeed. So we'll talk about The Twilight Samurai.
明日, 黄昏時までに 四千右衛門を討ち取れ。
二人の娘が日々育っていく様子を見ているのは、例えば畑の作物や草花の成長を眺めるのにも似て、実に楽しいものでがんす。
この子たちを抜け。
落ち着いて考えれ。
残されたこと、
あなたは昔とちっとも変わりましねの。私の方はすっかり変わってしまいましたども。
兵庫殿、これ以上続ければ私はあんたを切るぞ。
結構だ、
早く抜け。
なぜ清兵衛様が私愛に。
残されたご家族の方にはわしが責任を持って世話をさせるさけ。
それ伺って安心でござんす。
観念しろ、わしは甘く見た報いだ。
Which was directed by Yoji Yamada, written by Yoji Yamada and Yoshitaka Asaba, from a story by Shuhei Fujisawa, And this film stars Hiroyuki Sanada and Ri Miyazawa. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off IMDb, is: as the feudal Japan era draws to a close, a widower samurai experiences difficulty balancing clan loyalties, two young daughters, an aged mother, and the sudden reappearance of his childhood sweetheart. Now, Marcy, we know the reason why you gave this film to Buddy. So, Buddy, your thoughts on The Twilight Samurai?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic. I'm kind of a sucker for samurai films. Not that I've seen too many, but the ones that I have seen, I've kind of taken a fond liking to. And I just thought it was a really interesting take on this kind of era of Japan and feudal Japan, and kind of a different perspective on what being a samurai is and what you would expect from a samurai movie, just looking at it blankly without kind of knowing anything going into it. And kind of the, yeah, it's kind of a little bit genre defying in that regard. And yeah, I thought it was just kind of at times tender, quiet, and yeah, I was really impressed with it. I thought it was fantastic.
I'm glad to hear that I picked well specifically for you, Buddy.
Yeah, it was great. And yeah, like I was saying before, I guess I liked that, what you're saying before in the synopsis about, I guess, balancing the clan loyalties. I kind of really liked that it wasn't like a disgraced type of samurai that was kind of like down the rung of like importance or kind of like caste type system. But it was almost like the character himself, I guess, the Twilight Samurai, Sibu Gucci. I liked that he kind of is taking stock of his life and is happy to step back outside of the normal samurai duties and kind of get kind of value. Well, maybe not value is the right word, but like of seeing his young daughters grow and him raising them whilst being without a wife, and then kind of how his life kind of changes with that sweetheart coming back in. So yeah, I really liked this take on everything.
And Marcy, your thoughts on the movie? What is it about this movie that you love so much?
Yeah, so again, I saw this a few years ago. It was part of a movie swap, and I didn't look up like anything of what it was about when I first watched it. I just knew it dealt with samurai. And when you think of a samurai film, you sort of think of something that might have action and that sort of thing. So I was really taken aback that this is this beautiful drama, romance. It is a daughter's love letter to her father. There is just so much going on as it looks at that feudal Japan era, which is on the way out. And you really look at the life of what a samurai is, how everything works in their town, within their clan, what happens, I guess, behind the scenes. You see what his job is. You see that he is a widower. He's got these two young girls, but he is a very like delicate soul, is our Twilight Samurai Gucci, where there's a really nice little conversation in the film with his daughters, where his daughter mentions learning about Confucius at school, and he sort of mentions that it's probably good to learn about all sorts of things, not just sewing and all that kind of stuff. And you can see that's a very different outlook between him and everybody else. So he is a very different and unique character who sort of doesn't fall into this view of how people should be in this thing. But it does kind of have like a class system where he is a poorer samurai and some of the other ones are much well off. And you can see that he is in more poverty as he's got a side hustle of making cages, little like bamboo wooden cages. His clothes are tattered and apparently he smells, but his hair is also quite unkempt compared to everybody else. So there's little details in there. And then when it brings in the romance, it's very tender and it's very sweet. And you feel this immense chemistry between these two characters, as well as the actors. And it really is like a very beautiful story. And it does very much focus on this childhood sweetheart romance, but then this family dynamic between a father and his daughters. And I just thought it was such a beautiful film in every which way. And rewatching it, it was just like such a joy to watch it again. But it's also, I was very excited to see if you both would enjoy it as much as I do, and so far it seems like I did well, but we'll hear from Bede.
Sorry guys, it was a piece of shit. No, just kidding.
Get out of this podcast.
No, actually, I've heard about the Twilight Samurai for quite a while. I think I first became aware of it back in the early 2000s. It was actually received an Oscar nomination for Best International Film at the time, so I was very much aware of it when the nominations were announced. Like, oh, okay, there's this samurai film that's up for an Oscar. I'll have to check this out at some point. Over 20 years later. And I'm kind of surprised, Marcy, like you say, that it's taken me a while to finally get around to seeing this film, because I do love a good samurai film. And because I always find those type of stories really compelling. And I think what's interesting about this one in particular is it's a very low-key affair in terms of there's no real action or anything like that. Yeah, there's a big sort of fight sequence towards the end, but up to this point we're kind of just seeing the daily life of this samurai, who is definitely, I would say, more of a blue-collar type, since, like you say before, since this movie kind of explores classism as well, like his fellow samurais are a bit more well off and have more money than he does. So he has to take these odd jobs around town to provide to his family. And of course, he has to look after two daughters and his mother, who is very ill. And you get to see kind of the more tender side of that. Mm. And I think Hiroyuki Sanada, who would break out immensely after this film internationally, because he would do The Last Samurai, and then now these days he's in practically in every big major Hollywood film and franchise. He's absolutely wonderful in this movie. He really kind of gets us to the humanity of his character, and to show that yes, he is a samurai, he does have honor, but like a lot of people, he has his own fears, he's had his uncertainties, insecurities. And then once the character Tomo comes back into his life, since they were childhood friends, that relationship begins to blossom into romance. And like you say, it's a very sweet romance as well. Mm. It's just a beautifully done film. Like, it is a terrific one throughout. And yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect from this film. I expected it, like a lot of samurai films, to have a lot of action in it. But this one, as I stated before, is very low-key. It is focusing more on the drama and the family of a samurai, but also having the political stuff in the background, given that the feudal Japan era is starting to come to a close and samurais are on their way out. And we have all that stuff going on in the background that kind of shows that these are the dying days of being a samurai. And then, of course, once Inguchi meets the other samurai called Yogo, who he has to go and kill because he's basically gone crazy, you can kind of see that they see each other as the last of a dying breed as well. And yeah, I just think it's just a terrific film. It's beautiful. It's hot. It's very compelling. Maybe just a tad overlong as well. Like, some of the pacing could have been tightened a little bit. But no, I have to say, Marcy, this was a great choice. This was a really wonderful film.
Yeah, it really, really is. It's one I don't see talked about all too often. But yeah, no, I didn't actually know about the film until it was kind of like given to me to watch. And like back in the day, I used to watch the Oscars every year. And I probably remember seeing it come up with the best foreign language movie, but I honestly don't remember because that was like 20 years ago or some shit, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not pretend we're that old for a little while. But it is just one that stuck with me since I watched it. And it was just like, it's just such a beautiful and really tender film. And I am not somebody who will go out of their way to see like romance and stuff, because it's normally, I just can't deal with how shit it's portrayed. But in something like this, it is just so raw and so honest. It just, it really works. And that, again, that chemistry is intense. And the scene I really like love is after he's had that battle and he's had to kill that other samurai, as he had to do this thing, and he comes back and let me remember how to say her name. Tomo. Yeah, she's there with the girls, like after he's back, and he did not expect her to be there. And it was just like, oh, this love is just so really beautiful. It's just a very moving film. And yeah, the added stuff in the background with sort of the closing of that feudal era, I think just added a little something extra, because it was necessary for us to really understand Iguchi as a full character. But yeah, it really is that performance from Hiroyuki Sanada that is just fantastic. And yeah, like if I see his name on something, I'm definitely going to watch it. He's just one of those actors. As of this recording, I haven't watched the latest Shogun that's on Disney Plus, but I do want to get to it. I've heard good things, and of course Hiroyuki Sanada is in it, so can't really go wrong, I think, hopefully.
And buddy, is there anything you would like to add?
I guess with the lack of action or combat, I think the last fight was really good in the way that the kind of, even though Iguchi had kind of pushed back on, he's kind of accepted that one day I'm going to stop being a samurai and then I'll be a farmer, and that's cool. And he's not really in denial or resistance of kind of the samurai era coming to an end. And he's kind of put the back burner of being a samurai in all those roles. But it's when he's asked to do it, even though he kind of resists to go kill him, he still does it, even though he's reluctant to do that, because even though he kind of knows that the samurai way is ending, he still honors that code and doesn't wimp out of it. So I loved that. And then Yogo, I guess, is the kind of the opposite. He's asked to kind of commit harakiri, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he doesn't want to, even though that's kind of, you know, he's kind of a samurai and honoring the code, but he knows it's coming to an end and thinks it's ridiculous that he has to do that. So it's funny that he doesn't want to commit, and then Iguchi, who is kind of like, yeah, it's cool coming to an end, he commits out of honor anyway. And then that role was kind of get flipped during the fight when he realizes that he didn't bring a proper samurai sword, and that he's just been carrying around bamboo, and he's like, oh, you kind of besmirch me or disrespect me. And then he goes back into like samurai mode, like, well, you'll have to kill me, instead of let him go. So yeah, I just loved how that kind of like flipped around in various times when I'm like, oh, I will honor the code, or nah, I don't need to honor the code, I honor my family, and that's enough for me. So
yeah, I mean, you can kind of see his sort of disconnect with what it is to be a samurai when you sort of find out that he had to sell the sword to pay for his wife's funeral and everything. And I think that is probably something that separated him more from being a samurai, but he still sort of stuck to that honor and code.
Well, yeah, I guess like he still kind of had the bamboo sword there because he didn't want to reveal that he'd sold his sword.
Yeah.
But then he kind of just applied the samurai code, his honor and loyalty, more so towards his family, so that he was still a samurai, but towards them more so than everyone else. So yeah, that was great.
Yeah, because you see through the film, like, he just wants to be a farmer, as you said, and just watch his daughters grow up. And he's very proud of his daughters. And I got to say, those two performances are great. They were so cute. And they're just like very real and honest, like, performances from then children, because now they're probably freaking, you know, 40 or whatever. Okay, maybe not that old, but, you know. But yeah, like, really well done. And it's just, I think it's just a really beautiful movie. I don't know if there's more I can add to just it's a beautiful movie. Indeed. Go watch it.
Damn straight. And Marcy, what is your rating and final thoughts on the film?
This is a very easy 5. Probably I'm going to stop being a samurai now that my wife has died and I've got to look after my kids out of 5. It's a kind of film that for me when I rate things, it's definitely more on like a personal level than any other sort of level. So it does feel very personal to me. And this kind of film for me is like the perfect film. So that's why it gets 5 out of 5.
Awesome. And buddy, your final thoughts and rating of the film?
I gave it 4.5. And I got to tell you, on a few rewatches, maybe it could get to a 5. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was excellent. And it's definitely something that I could see myself revisiting again down the line.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it 4.5 out of 5 as well. And I could definitely see this one also going up in terms of rewatches. But on this very first viewing, I think it's just a terrific film, beautifully well made, brilliantly acted. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting take on the samurai film by focusing on other aspects other than the actual samurai part. So I think if people out there haven't seen this film, definitely seek The Twilight Samurai out. It is a fantastic little movie. And moving right along to my pick, which of course I picked for you, Marcy, which of course is the 2004 drama Yesterday.
In a land where tomorrow is a gift, where adversity is everyday life, comes a poignant tale of courage, compassion, and determination. A story of humanity defined by a mother's love. A moving portrait of one woman's strength in the face of insurmountable odds. Critics are calling Yesterday groundbreaking. An African gem. Compulsory viewing. Truly inspiring. A brilliant film. Open your heart to the true power of love. The power to change tomorrow. Laleti Kumalo. Yesterday.
Which was written and directed by Daryl James Root. And this film stars Laleti Kumalo, Lihi Mavalas, and Pepe Kambuli. And if I butchered anyone's names, please forgive me. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off IMDb, is: after falling ill, Yesterday learns that she is HIV positive. With her husband in denial and her young daughter to tend to, Yesterday, one goal is to live long enough to see her child go to school. And just like The Twilight Samurai, Yesterday was also a film that was nominated for the best, at the time, best foreign language film Oscar, but this in 2004. And again, I was aware of it because it was nominated in that category. And I think I ended up watching it a few years later. When I sat down to watch it, I wasn't sure what to expect, but what I got was this very simple but beautifully just moving family drama about this young mother who has been diagnosed with one of the, at the time, one of the worst illnesses you could possibly get, and how that kind of affects her whole life. But because of her love for her daughter, she is going to do everything that it takes for to make sure that her daughter actually goes to school. Because the character of Yesterday, she, as we discover throughout the film, she has never gone to school. She doesn't know how to read. She doesn't know how to write. But her dream is always for her daughter to actually go to school so she can be learn all those things. But I think having this diagnosis, it really just amplifies that to the point that it is, even though as sad and heartbreaking as a story it is, it's also a triumphant story about a mother's love for their child and doing whatever it takes, do everything you can for your child to succeed, even if you are on the verge of death. Mm. So I just think it's just an incredibly beautiful film. So this is the reason why I picked the movie for you, Marcy. So Marcy, your thoughts on Yesterday?
I looked briefly at the film when Bede had suggested it, and I literally said, Bede, why are you giving me what looks like a really depressing movie about a woman dying of AIDS? And I was almost apprehensive to watch it, because I can't lie, I am a very emotional person, and I do get very emotional when there's certain movies and they can evoke a lot of emotions with me, and I will cry and be devastated. But I got very emotional with this film, but it brought out a lot of different emotions. And I, like, as said with the previous film, it's actually a very beautiful film, and it is the love between a mother and daughter with this like horrific diagnosis. But it also dives into sort of in this Zulu village with what life is like. And the character of Yesterday seems satisfied with how things are, but she definitely wants more and better for her daughter. But because we have grown up with privilege, we were able to go to school, we had food, water, everything, medical care, and it's heartbreaking in so many ways that healthcare should be a basic human right. And the fact that Yesterday has to travel so far to go to a clinic and then get turned away week after week because it's so busy, even if she's there early, that stuff really gets to you, and it fucks you up in the way, like, why the fuck do people have to live like this? No one should live like this. So there's definitely a lot of that in there as well. But what I really found incredibly beautiful with the film is Yesterday is a very just pure and beautiful person who has such a love for her daughter, with a really beautiful name, excuse the pun, with Beauty. And it's very touching, but like you do see sort of the relationships within the small town, and she meets a teacher who comes to teach at the town, and the teacher turns out to be just a really lovely, very empathetic woman who tries to be there for Yesterday, even though Yesterday's not telling her everything that's going on. But she has expressed to the teacher that I want my daughter to go to school, and the teacher said, I'm very excited to teach her. And she tries to help her get to the clinic. I'll get you the taxi. So there's this really beautiful relationship, like friend relationship. And when it is very hard to watch when Yesterday goes to tell the husband who's away at the mines what's happened. And when she tells him, you see it through a window, he's just beating the shit out of her and no one does anything. And eventually he comes back home because, yeah, dude, you fucked around and got AIDS. And you see this hurt and forgiveness between these two characters. And despite the fact that he had a very awful response, she is still wanting to care for him and still has this love for him. And that certainly gives, as a viewer, conflicting emotions, because I would have been like, get the fuck out of here after what you did. But Yesterday is not that kind of person. She has just this big heart. As the village sort of knows that he has AIDS, they don't understand like what it is, how you get it, all of that stuff. They just know it's the virus. And people are not very nice to her, and she sort of has to build a hut away to look after the husband, to be away from all that. But again, the one person who doesn't shun anything is that teacher who, I mean, I was in tears when she sort of knows, they both know, and she's like, I would look after Beauty as if she was my own. And how do you not? Like, it's so beautiful. But I think the moment that hits you the most is when Yesterday does get to see her daughter go to school. I'm almost tearing up talking about it because it's such a beautiful moment. And I thought, I'm like, please don't have Yesterday collapse after she walks away from the school. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But
maybe if it was an American film.
Maybe. Yeah. But honestly, what an incredible and beautiful film. And I have no idea how this director is the director of Dracula 3000 and a Lake Placid sequel. What the fuck?
And not only that, Marcy, he made Dracula 3000 the same year as this film.
How does that happen?
You look at Daryl James Root's filmography. I need to talk about him for a second. And his filmography is literally insane. He will make something like a prestige film like Cry the Beloved Country with James Earl Jones, then make a musical with Serafina with Whoopi Goldberg, then Fatherhood with Patrick Swayze, and then Dangerous Ground with Ice Cube and Elizabeth Hurley, and then a Killer Lion movie, and then this movie Yesterday, and then a Lake Placid Legacy. Like, that, that is the type of filmography I want, is just having shit all over the place.
I would love to have, like, a prestige movie there, Dracula 7000. But for fucking real, like, everything about the film Yesterday, it's beautifully written, it's beautifully acted, directed, it's beautifully shot, everything. Again, it's an example of a movie that just feels it's done so well. Like, for me, it really hit and touched me in those emotional ways. It actually, like, I feel like it has sort of this hopeful ending that Yesterday did manage to see her daughter go to school. And there's that hope that Beauty is gonna get an education and maybe she will be able to do something special in the world. Like, I expected it to be very, very depressing. And there are points that absolutely is. But the hopefulness comes from she achieves what she wanted, which was to see her daughter go to school. But it's also that there are good people in the world. Like, the doctor that she sees is very kind. She definitely sort of should maybe understand that people that she's treating might not have gone to school, can't read or write, that sort of thing. When she mentions condoms during the discussion, she's like, I don't know what that is. Like, these things are obviously important, and it's something that a lot of people don't get, that kind of education. But again, there's that positive element that there is these relationships, that people will explain things, help others out. So I think, for me, I look at it as a very hopeful film as well. But I'm going to shut up about it now.
But, buddy, your thoughts on it Yesterday?
I thought it was good. And I think that's just, I guess, what you were saying before. Like, that, I think, like, that's the strength of it. Like, all the performances feel authentic and, I guess, like, real. And then, yeah, I guess it comes down to, like, what you're saying about the like the condoms, how it's transmitted. Like, they clearly say that, and then they're kind of showing kind of maybe the naivety or the lack of education for the villagers in the town, and how they kind of react.
It's a bit of both, I think.
That diagnosis.
Because you see the stark, like, contrast with the teacher character who knows that she has HIV/AIDS, but she doesn't hesitate to hug her and all of that stuff. And then you see that stark contrast where people don't want to go near them, and she's trying to tell the village, like, it's transmitted through blood, it's not airborne, and da da da. Like, just some basic education. That's a human right, and these things really impact you when you're watching the film, especially from, I think, our background, where you don't necessarily think that this is the case for people in other countries, but unfortunately it was then, it is now, which sucks.
Yeah, and at first I was kind of on like the same when the husband came back and he obviously had kind of beaten her up and in the city and stuff, and the reaction I guess I would have done, I'm like, oh, why is she doing this? But then it kind of all made sense that like that she was kind of showing the village how they should be acting, maybe to her or other people, and showing that empathy and care regardless of how he's acted in the past. Like, you should be a bit more thoughtful. And if anything, if she'd kind of succumb or given into hate, that maybe she would have deteriorated a little bit quicker, almost like the husband, and that she wouldn't have got to her seeing Beauty maybe get to school. So it almost like it gave her purpose and didn't break her down from being a bit hateful or vengeful or why me or all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I felt there was a bit of that through line. So I really liked that as well.
Yeah. And also Laledi Kumalo, who plays Yesterday, she is just fantastic in the film. And again, like you say, Marcy, she brings so much to that character and so much heart and grace and humanity. Like, even when she has all these obstacles in her way in regards to her illness, how her husband treated her, or how she's shunned by the people in her town, that she rises above it all, and she just brings so much to the film and her performance that you just can't help but be on her side. And we need more people like Yesterday in the world.
Yeah, like, it is the sort of character that you can really connect with. You do wish you could be like, okay, I'll do the water fountain stuff for you, I'll bring it back to your home. Like, it's painful to see her being unable to do something, but because like she hasn't really told anyone, people aren't mean to her yet, and people do still help her. But it's a very interesting, but I think it's quite like an important film in like definitely in regards to just these basic things that everybody should have access to, but just also how to be a genuine human being despite the fact that she has this lifelong illness that will probably cause her death or be partly responsible for her death. Like, it just has this hopefulness to it, and it definitely lies within, I think, the characters of Yesterday, the teacher, and of course Beauty, the daughter.
Definitely. And I think it also kind of shows, because I do remember at the time, while the AIDS crisis was going on, one of the countries that was affected the most was actually Africa. That was where a lot of the highest populations of AIDS patients were. And I think it still was, at least at the time when this film came out. So I like the fact that this film showcases that, but in a more intimate way, by focusing on this family and how they deal with it. And yeah, it's just sort of beautifully done. And the fact that the word AIDS isn't even mentioned till like almost an hour into.
Oh, it's very far into it. It's not. Yeah, it's unreal how it's not said for so long, but we know what it is that she has when she sees the doctor. Like,
yeah,
there's enough there to like know, but it's such a beautifully done movie. It really is.
Definitely. Marcy, your final thoughts and rating on Yesterday.
Again, it's a 5 out of 5 film. This, for me, it's the perfect kind of film. I think it's got a lot of things going for it, but it's, despite the subject matter, it's not a difficult watch. And there are like some very emotional parts of it, but for me, that ending just touched me like really hard. It was just so beautiful that she got to see it, and the smile on her daughter's face, I think, just made it all. I highly recommend this one.
And Buddy, your final thoughts and rating on the film?
I gave it 3.5. Very good. I just didn't connect with it emotionally as much as what I wanted to or thought I would, which makes me sound just like fucking really vile.
You evil man.
You evil buddy.
Yeah, but like I said before, I loved kind of what it was doing with the whole kind of blight on healthcare, and then education, and then the whole kind of how you can treat people as a person, like you were saying, Marcy, and showing empathy and how your, I guess, your outward feelings may help you get through it a little bit more. Maybe that's what drove her to get to seeing out to see her at school instead of kind of deteriorating so quickly. Mm. So, yeah, it's good.
Definitely. I'm going to give this 5 out of 5 as well. I think when I first watched it, it was 4.5, but it definitely, my rating for it has amped up to a 5 on this most recent viewing. I think it is a beautiful film through and through. And it's a very small, simple film, but it has a lot of heart. It has a lot of power to it. And it is, but it's also a very hopeful film as well, given the subject matter that it has. And it's just so beautifully acted as well. And again, I'm just stunned that the same guy who made this film also made like Placid Legacy.
I mean, it's crazy to think about.
I'm just stunned by this director's filmography. I am legit shook. I haven't seen a director's filmography be so all over the place since Boaz Yankin. And if you want to know his filmography, look that up because this is equally insane as this one. But what's interesting, before we wrap up our conversation on this one, 2 bits of trivia on this film. It's the first film to be done entirely in the Zulu language.
Oh.
And also, it is the only narrative film, at least that I know of, that it has been nominated for both an Oscar and an Emmy. Because even though it did get a Best Foreign Language Film Oscar nomination, HBO picked it up and released it on their channel, and it actually received an Emmy nomination for Outstanding TV Movie. So it's the only narrative film to get that honor.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool, actually.
But we'll move right along to our third and final film, which, of course, is the 2010 thriller Confessions.
I'm a single mother. My daughter, Manami. Manami has died. 警察は事故死と判断しました。でも事故死ではありません。マナミはこのクラスの生徒に殺されたんです。犯人は二人。これからはその二人を A、B と呼ぶことにします。
殺人が悪だなんて僕には誰も教えてくれなかった。
なんてね。
僕は君と友達になりたかったんだ。
あの子はやればできる子なんです。
ただ悪い友達に騙されただけなのに。
僕は真っさらな気持ちで君たちに向き合いたい。
先生、このクラスは異常です。法律があなたを守るとしても、私はあなたを許しません。なぜあの子は死ななきゃならなかったの？
何を言い出すんです。
エルテルなんか死んでもいい。
君は明らかに出来損ないだよ。
あいつこそ敵そこだよ。
ザマーミロ。
折口は悪魔だ。
殺してやりたい。
想像を絶する告白があなたの命に突き刺さる。今、極限のエンターテインメントが幕を開ける。告白。
これが私の復讐です。
Which is written and directed by Tetsuya Nakashima, based on Kohaku Haku by Hine Minato. And this film stars Takako Natsu, Masaki Okada, Yoshino Kimura, and Nana Ishida. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off IMDb, is a psychological thriller of a grieving mother turned cold-blooded avenger with a twisty master plan to pay back those who were responsible for her daughter's death. So, buddy, this was your pick for me. And I know you had the daunting task to pick a movie for me because I pretty much have seen everything. I mean, you've seen my letterbox. There's about nearly 12,000 movies I logged in on that website. So it would be hard for anyone to find a movie I haven't seen for me. So, buddy, why did you pick Confessions as the film for me?
It was very difficult to find a film that you hadn't seen. So I guess, like, from deduction, we'd had The Twilight Samurai. I was like, okay, cool. That was nominated for Best Foreign Film or International Film with whatever that's called now in 2003, I think. And then the following year, Yesterday was nominated but didn't win. So I'm like, all right, cool. So this is a good theme here, choosing films that were nominated, didn't win from the 2000s. So maybe I'll go down that route. And I was thinking like, well, we've got something tender here, something that's dealing with AIDS. It's maybe let's just do something a bit crime or thriller or a bit more darker. So yeah, I try to go through the list and you'd seen a lot of them. So then I kind of had to step outside that. I'm like, all right, we'll go to that kind of genre, but maybe we'll go Japanese as well. And that's when I came across Tetsuya Nakashima. And I haven't seen anything of his before, but I did watch the trailer for Kamikaze Girls, and it's absurd. And then I came across Confessions, and the trailer for that didn't give too much away. But as soon as I watched that trailer, I was like, holy shit, this looks crazy. And I think it's going to be this. But I was diplomatic, and I think I gave you three choices in our chat, and I left it to you. And I was praying that you would choose Confessions. And you did. I can't remember what the other two choices were. I think maybe one of them was Kamikaze Girls.
It might have been. I have to look back and check, but...
Yeah, so I kind of went with that. And yeah, it was pretty crazy because I guess what you alluded to earlier before, but I haven't seen any of these three films. So me choosing this wasn't like, I love this film and this is great, let's give it to you. This was something that was kind of like, this sounds pretty messed up and it's a film that you haven't seen, so let's throw it to you. So kind of get three fresh eyes on it. And I'm so glad that I watched this last because it's the one that kind of exploded my brain the most. Yes. And I don't know if I was going to be able like to be conscious or caring enough to really appreciate The Twilight Samurai or Yesterday if I'd watched them after this, specifically because I was watching them on the same day. But yeah, this was crazy. And the first 30 minutes of this film is just batshit crazy. And I was watching it with Kim. She watched the first 30 minutes and she was like, how are we getting any more movie after this 30 minutes? Like, where does it go from here? And there was times when she was like 10 minutes in, she's like, oh my God, this is tragic. Why are we seeing this? And then she's like, holy shit. And then like, what the? And then, yeah, it's like a roller coaster of emotions inside the first 30 minutes. And then the opening credits hit the title card.
Yeah.
And then we have a whole other movie after that. And I'm like, where does it go? And yeah, it was crazy. I
was
didn't
a
know
film.
What to expect.
Yeah. It was a film and it's like completely different to the other two. Cause I watched all three movies like in a row during the day into the night. And as I put this on, like I just started it, my housemate got home and I said, oh yeah, I'm just watching this. It's just started. And he was on his computer. But as he told me afterwards, he's like, yeah, I kept watching that because it just kept going crazier and crazier. Like, yep. That was something. But yeah, Bede, I think because it was chosen for you.
Indeed.
Your time to talk.
Well, this is another one I am surprised I still hadn't gotten around to saying, because I've heard about this film for ages as well, because our good friend of the show, Marcy, Sam Inglis, saw this film ages back and he loved it. And I think he was raving about it. So I was like, okay, if Sam likes it, I'll put it in the docket at some point to check out in the future. So when Buddy, of course, obviously put this on his list of possible films for me to watch for the show, I thought, you know what? I've been meaning to see Confessions. I might as well pick it for this one. And I wasn't sure what to expect when I sat down to watch the film. I knew it was a thriller. It involved a teacher. It involved students. That's all I knew. And I'll say this. The first 30 minutes of this film could easily just be its own short film.
It could have been a short film. I'm like, this scene is going on and what the fuck is going on? And then I was like, I think it was before like that first block, I messaged the group and I'm like, what is it with you guys and picking movies with AIDS? Because this is the thing in this fucking movie and I just couldn't even.
Oh, like, and
what
that's
the hell?
That's the least batshit insane part of the movie, because you have that first 30 minutes where you have the teacher, Yuko, played by Takako Matsu. And, of course, she's addressing her students. Her daughter has recently died. It has been ruled by people as an accident. But she tells her students that she believes her daughter was actually murdered. and the two people that she believes are responsible are in the classroom. And to kind of bring the whole AIDS thing back into play is because her ex-husband is HIV positive. So she tells the students that she, because earlier in the scene there, all the students are drinking milk. And
we're very specifically seeing them drink milk. There's a whole thing about the milk. And it's like,
yep.
Why is it rat's milk? Is this an episode of The Simpsons? What's going on?
I was like, why is this so weird? This is so weird. They get some kind of sponsorship deal with some big milk
with
brand.
The milk, yes.
Indeed. Given where the story goes, I'm glad that nobody's probably some milk company didn't sign up as a partner in this film. But yeah, so, and she pretty much tells them that she infected two of the milk cartons with AIDS. And then, of course, all the students freak out, and then it just escalates from there. We find out that indeed her daughter was murdered by two of her students. And watching this film, this first half really kind of reminded me a lot of the James Bulger case, where the young toddler was murdered by two young boys. So that kind of, I got it,
yeah.
Shades of that during this first
half.
Yeah,
and I think particularly because the daughter was about five. So it's like that really young child that has been killed by like older kids. Sort of had a bit of that, but it's like, how are you keeping your calm when you're like, two students murdered my daughter? I'd be like, if that was me and I found out who did it, I probably would have like ripped their heads off.
Indeed, indeed. But it escalates from there.
It is. This escalated quickly, the movie.
It's probably a good thing you did pick this film, buddy, because I know you said you were trying to look for another Oscar-nominated film, particularly a crime one for this show. But this film was actually shortlisted on the Foreign Language Film Oscar at the 83rd Academy Awards. So you were almost close.
I actually saw that it was shortlisted but not selected. I'm like, that's a close enough tangent. And then I kind of saw that was like quite popular in Japan. I think it was like its seventh highest grossing film in that year or something. Like it was very kind of popular.
And it won a whole bunch of Japanese Academy Awards.
Yes.
As well. And not surprising as well, because this movie is literally insane. This film, like, even though, yeah, this is a spoiler podcast, I kind of almost don't want to give anything away what happens in the rest of the movie. People need to experience the insanity of this.
I mean,
one.
Spoiler alert, obviously.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So we might as well talk about it because there's a lot more we need to say. But so for our listeners out there, if you don't want to know any more about what happens in the rest of Confessions, stop right now, go see the movie, then come back and listen to this one. So essentially, it starts off with the teacher, because there is, it's the why the movie is called Confessions. Is that different characters are giving their confessions of what's happening in the story. So the teacher, of course, gives her confession about what she does. And then, of course, we go into the lives of the two boys who murdered her daughter. But then, of course, we learn more about them. And one of the kids was so traumatized by the whole endeavor that he's become absolutely feral. Also, his own mother is terrified of him. And then, of course, the other one, who's kind of not as badly well off as the other, but then we find out this dude's a little bit of a psycho as well. So
yeah, it sort of takes a few turns, because you think that with the thing, like the prank that they do, like you thought this kid thought he killed the little girl, but then it's the quieter kid who actually was like, oh, she's alive, I'm gonna fucking kill her. Like it, and then you realize, like, oh, that's the kid that's like all closed up in his home, and it's like fucked up. I'm like, what the fuck school is this shit? What is going on? Like these fucked up little shits.
Yeah, but then you kind of realize the other boy, it's all part of his master plan to kind of egg this other kid who doesn't have that many friends to commit this murder. And because he just wants to get a kick out of murdering someone. And the reason for that is because his mother, who abused him as a child has not been in his life for so long, and he wants his mother to notice him. So he thought, how can I get my mother to notice me? I know. How about if I murder people?
The whole thing is like he sort of works on this thing. He wins this award at school, but it's overshadowed by a teenager murdering people.
Mm.
And he's like, well, if I'm going to get like attention, obviously I need to murder someone. Like that's his thinking, like to get his mum's attention. If there's anything that this movie has to say, one of them is don't have a really healthy attachment or something towards your mother. Like if you're committing murder to get your mother's attention, maybe you really should have gone to therapy, like for real. Like it is interesting because through the confessions, we find out what everyone's motivation is. But then things escalate further because we get sort of the confession of the schoolgirl, Shuya? Shuya, I think that was her name. That mm-hmm. was it. Yeah, I think that was her. There was a few girls, but I think it's that one who befriends the actual psychotic one. And then he just fucking murders her and puts her in the fridge.
Mm.
And I'm like, what the fuck? This escalates and have this one little chain of event of them killing a child.
I almost wanted to do like a one-line Letterboxd review of like Vin Diesel, It's About Family. But yeah, no, that wouldn't do this movie justice. But yeah, it, at times it felt almost like Old Boy, this kind of like 4D chess manipulation of like, it's almost like Drake versus Kendrick right now. It's like, I've already recorded 3 diss tracks and I'm just waiting for you to drop your one. It's like, it's just all over the place. It's one-upping. I know what you're going to do, so I have something prepped, and I know you're going to do this, so it's a counter move. It's crazy.
It's a game of chess with actual people.
Yep.
And is it Yuko Moriguchi, the teacher? Like, she meticulously had every little bit planned just about. It really does everything. That escalated quickly. Because, like, by the end, it's like, what the fuck did I just watch? But this is fucking brilliant.
And that's the thing, though. What I find amazing about her master plan, and sort of in comparison to the villain from Old Boy's plan of revenge, that's nothing compared to her plan in this movie. Because you would think, okay, if she did infect 2 cartons of milk with AIDS, you'd think, oh, that's the perfect revenge. You got back at those 2 kids. Even though we find out that that was all a trick, like that milk wasn't infected. But you think, okay, that's a bit of a revenge. But it's like, no, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what I've got planned for these 2 little shits.
But the thing with this film is I don't know if I'm actually convinced that she didn't infect them with AIDS in the milk. Mm. But either way, like that's... She sort of said it's like really like a low transmission type of thing. Like it is a good, it's not good, but it is a fucked up, I guess, psychological game to play with somebody.
Mm.
But in order to do that, like you need to specifically give them the right cartons. And that's like a fucking classroom of like 50 kids or something. But yeah, if there's just like so much going on and it's crazy, but I kind of love this movie.
And also, like, not exactly the same, but for the final kid, she does her own kind of version of the Scott Tenenbaum revenge on that kid.
We all love a Scott Tenenbaum revenge, don't we?
Indeed. But less cannibalism, unfortunately.
Yeah, there was this, but it's like, I'm really fucking up the one thing you care about, dickhead.
Mm.
And she's like, it goes in, there's a whole, like, murder-suicide attempt situation with the other kid and his mum. There's so much going on for a movie that isn't all that long. It's, what, an hour, 46, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
The first part is, like, this half an hour. Then we get, like, the sort of title screen, and then we're like, well, these are now other confessions. What the fuck? But it's one of those films, and it's so fucking well done. It's well thought out, like, pardon me, there are things happening in this movie that you don't know were part of the bloody plan, like the wanker new teacher that they have and him going to that kid's house. holy fucking shit, all that was just fucking set up. And I'm like, what? But at the same time, I'm like, they established during this opening, the opening speech, students that like a male teacher can't be alone with a female student and vice versa, yet that's what's happening with this teacher and the students. I was like, what? that one little thing was like, I thought they had rules in the school for this, unless she was talking out of her ass for that to happen. Like, I don't know, but there were things I picked up on in there. But after like the two films being a lot more quieter and simple-ish stories, this one just is like all sorts of things all rolled into one. It's a beautiful chaos, and I am someone who does enjoy a good revenge film, and this is right fucking up there. Like, if you're gonna serve revenge, it's gonna be fucking ice cold. Not just cold, it's ice fucking cold. Like, holy shit. I probably shouldn't look up to Yuko Moriguchi as a role model, but here we are.
definitely. I guess that could be a wrap on this discussion of confessions, because we basically confessed the entire plot of the movie. But...
Well, actually, before we wrap it up, we should all make our own confession.
No, that's not going to happen.
Well, I think we should just make a confession.
Okay.
On this podcast.
Marcy can go first.
My confession is that if given the chance, I probably would actually exact revenge very much like the teacher in this film. But at other times, I might not be as well planned or calculated. So it could be sort of like a nice spit on your grave style revenge of chopping off dicks.
Indeed.
So, yeah, that's my confession. I am. Yeah, if you fuck with Marcy, it's not a good thing for you. That's not a confession. That's just a fact, though.
I mean, that is true, and we should say it. And, Buddy, do you have anything to confess on this podcast?
I don't know. Gosh, I've got nothing. You've just, like, put me on the spot. Like, I'm sure there's stuff that I could confess to, but, yeah, I have nothing that comes to mind. Although, yeah, actually, I'll give you one. I prank called this guy from school across over the course of a year, maybe like 10 to 20 times. He bullied me like 2 years earlier in school when I moved into state and had no friends. And then later on, we're kind of in the same kind of group, and my social status had kind of improved by then. And he was a bit of a dick, and yeah, I would just prank call him, and he'd be one of the people that would just bite and stay on hold, talk to me, and I'd just do accents and stuff. And a year later, I'm walking past him in a nightclub. I'm walking downstairs. My bumps me, turns around, and then I turned around because I'd had enough, right? Over this course of 8 months, I turned around and I did one of the accents to him, and I said it was me. And the guy like wanted to storm down the stairs and bash me. But yeah, it was a good running joke between me and my friends for a good 8 months or 9 months, gathering around.
Fucking played. Like this.
Yeah, that was revenge for me.
That's a good revenge. I like that.
Yep.
Ooh. What can I confess on this show? Especially at the very last minute.
Sorry, maybe I should have went last with that one, because that was maniacal.
I pulled out just a random thing that I confess to, which it's not even a story from my life. This is just what is a potential to happen.
Well, while you think about one, Bede, I'll quickly touch over some things before we close the discussion on this.
Yes. But
Radiohead Needle Drops has been one of my most frustrated things in films more recently, specifically if they're well-known songs. Mm. The last one time it happened was in The Creator last year, and I thought it was really out of place to have the song and the Radiohead song that they use this. Mm. There's a Radiohead needle drop in this, and they repeatedly use the song Last Flowers in it, and I think it just is perfect with the use and tone of the film and everything that's happening. So I wasn't expecting to hear Radiohead in Confessions. Same. But the way they use it was excellent. And then the other thing I want to highlight is just like the cinematography and the shot selection was excellent. And yeah, at times they're using some like handy cam stuff that kind of makes it look like home video. And then other times it's like super, super clean and almost like, I know you're a Snyder fan. It's almost like Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
But good. And it looks better. So sorry, Bede.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I can kind of like compare it to a lot of the slow motion stuff happening.
Yeah, I agree with you immensely with the Radiohead. Like, I love Radiohead, fantastic, but certain things can be overused or doesn't suit it. But using Last Flowers in this film actually fucking hit really fucking well. Absolutely. Yep. Bede, do you have a confession?
I want to murder Buddy, just saying. But anyways, though.
I thought you wanted
Was that before or after the Snyder hate?
I'm not going to confirm or deny it.
Have you lost a man crush on Buddy now?
Yes,
I'm sorry. I'm a Snyder hater.
It's okay, Buddy. We all can't enjoy greatness. But anyway, so... I'm just trying to think, what is a confession? The only thing is, okay, I'll confess this. I don't know if I ever told you this, Marcy, but I don't know how to ride a bike.
I mean, dude, I have not ridden a proper bike since I broke my arm on one when I was like 11. So,
because I basically had like a traumatic, to me, it was a traumatic experience. My whole family laughs at me. This is like they were teaching me how to ride. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is good. And then, of course, they let me go. And I looked back and then I just fell off the bike and then I haven't been on one since.
I mean, I fully understand that. I haven't been back on a bike since my tire locked up. I went flying over. If I didn't have a helmet, I'd be dead. Broke my arm. I'm like, you know what? I'll stick to exercise bikes.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly.
I'll give a real life confession though.
Okay.
And I actually confessed this to my mum a few weeks ago. She never actually knew. And my mum knows a lot. Like, I don't really hide things from my mum all that much, but when I was like 11 or 12, I snuck a couple of her ciggies and tried them, and I thought they were terrible.
I mean, that is the perfect age to experiment with smoking, Marzi.
Yeah, like, mum, I smoked a couple of your cigarettes once.
Oh, yeah.
I was so good about it. I only took like one or two. You never noticed. There you go.
There we go. Well, that was the Super Confessions podcast.
Yes, the final ratings, I guess.
Yes. Buddy, your final thoughts and rating on Confessions.
This is a 5-star just because of how absurd it was. And yeah, just it was like getting slapped in the face, coming to, and then getting like slapped in the face again in a good way.
And Marcy, your final thoughts and rating for Confessions.
Oh, yeah, I give it 5. I probably will exact revenge, but maybe not as meticulous in this movie out of 5. I was just looking up a little bit of trivia. It was the director's first non-comedy film. So if the directors like had done comedy before this, like, holy fucking shit, did you nail non-comedy? But also the 7th highest grossing film in Japan of 2010. So that's pretty cool. But it is... It literally is. That escalated quickly, the movie. And I think we said that earlier today or yesterday. I can't remember, Bede. But I was enthralled, like, from beginning to end. I was so into this film. I couldn't look away. It gives you reveals and shocks and twists. I'm like, what a insane, but fucking, again, one of those just perfectly done films. Like, all of the films we've watched have been 5 stars for me. And to whoever was the wanker that was on Twitter, there's always one wanker who was like, there are no 5-star films, or blah, 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 critics, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, do you know how many movies I get 5 stars? Fucking Blood Rage is a 5-star movie.
Hell yeah.
Like, you don't have to be such a stuck-up snob to critique movies, I'm just saying.
The Room is 5 stars.
It is. If it means something to you and you're like, that's 5 stars to you. Like, for real. Anyway, I'm just having a bitch like I like to do. I know this, and I'm with 2 of my good friends hanging out, like, of course.
Exactly. Oh, as Freddy, you should
you
be.
You look so cute, buddy, but you're on my pillows and I have to get all the fluff off them.
Just a disclaimer, she's not talking to me, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I call my dog Buddy, even though his name's Freddy, but he's also Boo and Boo Boo Bear.
Indeed.
And little shit and dickhead. You get down, you shut up.
But I guess for my final thoughts on this movie, yeah, well, I'm glad I finally saw it. It's definitely a 4.5 star film for me, but it could go up on repeat viewings. The only criticism I have with this film is I do feel like some of the editing choices were a bit weird, like in terms of, I mean, watching the film, I'm like, okay, these choices that the director's making are a bit odd in terms of cutting from one scene to another. So I was a bit distracted by that. But other than that, though, it is a great thriller. It has so many twists and turns that you don't see coming.
Mm.
It has some really great performances. It definitely has a lot of David Fincher vibes to it throughout. So I could, like, if this movie ever was remade and David Fincher was attached to it, I wouldn't be surprised, because this definitely feels like something that would be in his wheelhouse. But
I can see that, actually.
But it's just a great movie. And again, I definitely recommend everyone to check out. And also, another bit of trivia, this is one of Michael Mann's favorite movies.
Oh, right on. Good choice.
And also the same year when it was nominated for the Japanese Academy Awards, it beat out 13 Assassins, the great Takashi Miike
film. That's a fucking excellent movie.
And also that same year, there was a remake of the film Ghost. Yeah, there's a Japanese remake of Ghost. I kind of need to see this movie now.
I'm curious now.
And I'm looking at a photo.
I'm going to go straight to YouTube for the pottery scene.
Actually, I'm looking at a photo from this Ghost remake, and it literally is the pottery scene.
Excellent.
Like, I would have expected, like, there would be a Bollywood remake of Ghost. But you don't sort of see too much of that, like, with Japan films. Like, you do see people like adapting Japanese films for English language, but you don't see that all too often, I think.
Well, it's actually quite common, like, to go off at this tangent. You actually kind of see it a little bit more often, because
maybe,
like,
I just don't hear about it. Maybe it's just because the craziness of the Bollywood ones are the ones that you hear about, because when you get a Bollywood movie, like, you get those epic musical and song and dance numbers and stuff, and it's like, why is this in a Exorcist version or something? But they're always, like, very fascinating. Continue, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, Marcy, just to answer your question, there's not one but two Indian remakes of Ghost.
Well, that is
that
on
makes
point.
Sense.
Yeah. But now that you've mentioned there are Japanese remakes of things, I'm going to have to look them up and educate myself now.
Yeah, well, I read, like, a couple years ago that Japan actually remade the film Sideways, the Paul Giamatti film.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit more common than we think, but again, we don't really hear about them as much. Because
we don't necessarily get every single movie. And
exactly.
This is the day and age of streaming, so it's not like we're in the 90s and SBS is going to show us all the good stuff. You can hear about all that stuff, hopefully, upcoming this year on After Dark Super Marcy, an Adults Only podcast. And we've already discussed the Weather Woman films that were on SBS back in the day.
I've got it queued there, and I've got the movies on my hard drive ready to go. So it's like been sitting there. When I get the opportunity, like, I don't know when it's going to be. Whether it's going to be in a year, 18 months, 2 months, 3 months.
I'll,
like,
bug you for
maybe
it.
Maybe it's this weekend. All of a sudden, you're just going to get a message out of the blue. I'm like, Weather Woman's rewatched a fantastic. Listen to the pod. Great.
Yeah. I love exploring we used to watch on SBS. Like,
SBS,
shit.
World movies. Let's go.
Let's fucking go.
And also, how could we forget Eat Carpet? But that's my favorite title for a show ever. But anyways, I guess that could be a wrap for this episode.
I mean, we've gone on tangents now. Like, what the fuck?
To be fair, Marcy, this is the podcast where we're allowed to go on tangents compared to our shows.
Yes, that's how the original show started. It was like, we're going to have a topic, but we're just going to have tangents and bullshit.
Exactly.
Throw it.
Exactly. But before we wrap up the show tonight, Marcy, where can people find this on the internet this week?
If you want to see Bede's nudes, you probably have to DM him for that.
All right, fine, I'll send them out. God.
Yeah. Hi, Freddie. Stay there, sweetie. No, ignore that. You can find us at supermarcy.com, and all the links are usually in the show notes, but you can go to the handy link tree, which is linktr.ee/thesupernetwork, and you can find all our links there as well. And you can find the Super Network on your socials. Just look it up. And you can find the Super Podcast on all your podcast streaming platforms. Our main feed has this podcast, plus all the other ones on the network, but they all have their individual feeds as well. And again, you can look up After Dark with Super Marcy and catch up on that podcast. And I'm very sporadic with my releasing, but I'll get better at that. And I'm Super Marcy on all the socials. I am Super_Marcy on Letterboxd. And Freddie, why are you getting my Audi? He's ripped my Audi down from the freaking basket.
I'm keeping this all. I'm keeping this all in, by the way. But buddy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
People can find me on Twitter at BuddyWatson12, over on Letterboxd at BuddyWatson. I do have a podcast, Radio Watson. I haven't posted there in a good while, maybe a year and a half. But it's evergreen content, so you can go back there and listen to some album reviews, some filmography reviews. I think we did Ryan Johnson at one point, Linkin Park discography. So there's some evergreen content there, some interviews with some gaming people as well. So it's a lot of fun. Maybe bringing it back, not sure yet, haven't decided. This definitely helps scratch part of the podcast itch, though. Well, so thank you for bringing me on. Thank you for recommending me a great movie and then letting me watch other great movies as well, because I think all the picks were fantastic. So
yeah, it was a
chat about it.
It was seriously a great lot of films, but we'll have to get you back on very soon. We have some. We know we like doing our audio commentaries on the Super Network, so we definitely have opportunities for some of those.
Indeed.
So we'll definitely get you back on, Freddie. I know that you think that you're like a part of every podcast, but why are you being a turd right now? Why Indeed. Are you going in the clothes hamper and getting the Woody?
Yes.
Huh? Oh, this dog.
Well done, Freddie.
Well, people want to find me out there on the internet without... You can find photos of me and Freddie out there, but but in terms of where you can find me on the internet, you can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd under BeJavide as one word. You can always find all my work over at supermarcy.com. And also you can listen to my solo podcast, Bean vs. the Living Dead, and its spin-off, Bean and Steve vs. Camp Crystal Lake, on all podcast streamers everywhere. So, yep, that is a wrap for this episode of the Super Podcast. We hope you all enjoyed it, and we'll see you all next time. See everybody. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Appliances are gone berserk. I cannot keep up. Treading on people's toes. Snot nose, let all punk. And I can face the evening straight. You can offer me escape. Houses move and houses speak. If you take me there, you'll get relief. 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 If I'm gonna talk, I just wanna talk. Please don't interrupt. Just sit back and listen. 'Cause I can face the evening straight. You can offer me escape. Houses move and houses speak. If you take me, then you'll get relief.